Excuse me.
He should see the doctor in charge.
I am the doctor in charge.
My spider senses are starting to tingle.
Just hang on to your lariat.
Wonder what kind of a scene I'm getting into.
And welcome to issue 93 of Behind the Panels, the comic book show that traveled the world looking for a cure, and all we got was this lousy t-shirt. I'm Richard Gray.
I'm David McVeigh.
And I'm David Longo.
In this issue, DC has another crack at a war comic, and Brian Michael Bendis unleashes more Spider-Men. Then, Fox expands its own Marvel Cinematic Universe with more X-Men and Fantastic Four sequels. Also, it's the return of Daredevil and what we've been reading, while Richard and Dave brag about seeing Captain America, the Winter Soldier early. Plus, our kick-ass pick of the week, Doctor Strange, The Oath by Brian K. Vaughan and Marcos Martin. This is Behind the Panels.
People are strange when you're a stranger. Faces look ugly when you're alone. Women seem wicked when you're unwanted. Streets are uneven when you're down, when you're strange. Faces come out of the rain when you're strange.
How are we, boys? Back in the studio for another week.
Yeah, not too bad. We're fighting against technology, but we're okay.
David, have you been playing with the computers again?
Just a little.
Those of you, we should just say a bit of apology for last week. If the sound level sounded a little bit off, teething problems with the new mics, power supply issues, all that kind of things. We're back to doing it old school this week. So
yeah, we've cracked out the old mixer, which doesn't have enough inputs, but it's working.
But it seems like, but if you can hear us right now, it's working.
Absolutely. I can hear us. So does that mean we're
Look, it's been a massive week for geek for us. Apart from this book that we're reading this week, Doctor Strange, was fantastic. David and I, as we said, saw Captain America: The Winter Soldier early, which was we saw it on the 20th of March.
I am so jealous.
But you're still seeing it a good week before the public. So
I'm jealous of myself because I can't go watch it now.
No, that's the problem, is I now have to wait a few weeks to go and see it again. And we wanted Disney to run it again at the end of the screening. We saw that. We saw the Lego Movie finally came to Australia, which has got a whole bunch. It's basically
we watched that today just before recording
right
this.
Basically, it's we got a just Justice League being on screen, and that there was that terrific Marvel Assembling a Universe show that was
great
on.
Great show, yeah.
A great episode of Arrow, a whole lot of great comics, including the return of Daredevil this week. It's been our week, really, boys.
It's a good week.
And didn't something happen on Walking Dead, you were saying before?
Oh, and the Walking Dead episode. For people listening to this show, it'll be last week's episode. It'll be like the third last episode of the season. Holy hell, right? For those of you who have seen it. My God, what an ending to that episode. And the last half hour of that show is as tense as all swear word. As tense as all cuss.
As tense as all expletive.
What is it? Cock-a-doody dirty.
I just watched Fantastic Mr. Fox. It's like, it's as tense as all cuss. So
I watched Misery the other day. So right.
But that was this week. We're going to go back 35 years now to see what was happening in 1978 in our vintage Clip of the Week.
How have I toyed with you? I don't understand.
This mortal Stephen Strange is the one chosen by Lynn to succeed him. Thrice you had the opportunity to slay him, and thrice you stayed your hand. Why, Morgan?
I commanded Belzeroth to bring him to me. It was he who failed.
Do not lie to me, woman. Why have you spared him?
I am still a woman, and the man attracted me.
Then you find no satisfaction in my service.
I would feel the warmth of a man's arms again. After all these years alone.
You bartered human love for power. You made a covenant with me. Would any mortal man desire you if he saw you thus?
Master!
Expect no pity of me, Morgan. If you desire the mortal, then you may have him, but only once my lust is satisfied. I hunger for the souls of men, and not until I have them will my hunger be fulfilled. Bring me the old man or destroy him.
My God, that brings back memories.
I know. Look, I watched all that again last week. Just after I got home from the show last week, I watched all of, that's the 1978 Doctor Strange TV movie.
And I saw it actually, when I saw it originally on TV, probably in 1980, 81.
Right.
It was a late night movie here on Australian television and had never heard of it. Didn't even know it existed. And I turned it on, I went, hey, I know this character.
It's really funny because actually it's pretty accurate and they've got a lot of the symbols and everything down, like the window is that symbol that you'll see all throughout this book that we do this week. It is Doctor Strange.
Yes, for one it of is. It.
But my favourite line from that clip there was...
I am still a woman.
I love the thing. 1978, they had to have the thing is, well, the reason I didn't kill him is because I wanted to jump his bones.
So, Dave, I take it you've never seen this.
No, I'd never heard of it until just now.
The thing is, though, it hasn't been. This is one of those, you know, holy grails for comic book fans because it's not been released on DVD.
No.
At all. I don't know whether it'll come out closer to the release of the eventual Doctor Strange movie.
I don't think it'll. I think they'll bury it.
Minor spoilers.
They're going to use it to pave roads and something.
Minor spoilers, he may get a mention in Captain America the Winter Soldier.
Oh. I haven't seen it yet, people.
Little Easter egg. Little Easter egg in there.
And so. We might have squealed for joy a little bit too loudly.
Excuse me, sir, you're going to have to leave.
I think we were the
only... I
think we were the only two people, hey?
Yeah.
That squealed, like audibly.
You can tell it was like a non-comic book fan, or like they were all critics, and us. Because there were moments where, like, you know, Dave and I were grabbing each other's arms going, this is happening.
I think I audibly went, ah!
It was pretty much like two hours and 20 minutes of me just going...
Oh man, that sounds
so. You're going to pull that off as a sound clip.
I am.
They've already shut off because we spoiled it.
You know what? What else we're going to spoil this week? Because I'm out of segues. We're going to spoil what we've been reading. So let's do it.
That's it.
Where? Looks like we got ourselves a reader. Read between the lines, bitch.
Damn right we will. Probably the book that came out this week that we're excited about more than any, despite the fact that I sound like I've just woken up from a nap, was, of course, The Return of Daredevil after a whole month without it. This is Wade Somnee, Rodriguez's
Daredevil.
It's
been so long.
Yeah. In fact, I think last month we covered the previous run, and there was a four-issue miniseries in between, and I've actually got to draw attention to this four-issue miniseries. It's called Daredevil Road Warrior, which had nothing to do with
Mad Max
at all, but there was a scene in the thing, and I'm seeing if I can pull up the panel. He can smell petrol. No, but there was a scene in, towards the last couple of panels of... the last, I think, issue 4 of this 4-issue miniseries that came out sort of in between the first series and this series, where it was basically a little bit of advertising that happened in there. And I kind of thought, Mr. Wade, did you really just do that? Let me see if I can pull it up here, because I'm not sure if I pulled a screenshot of it or not. No, I didn't. But there was basically, he says, that's the unmistakable sound of a 2014 model, whatever car it was. And I went and Googled it. Yep, that car has just come out. And she goes, yep, there was only a couple of places that I could get this fantastic car from.
Well, like, they got to pay for the Infinite Comics somehow.
Yeah, so. I was like, really? That's how they chose to end this awesome little arc with an ad? Like, I thought we stopped doing product placement in comics like that, but apparently
an
not.
Ad for a car, of all things. Yeah,
well, let's not forget last year when they released the Harley Davidson Avengers or whatever it was.
Yeah, but that was actually a bought and paid for. You knew from the start. It was Harley Davidson presents this comic. This was just like slipped in, and I'm like, oh, disappointed. But that leads straight into Daredevil number one, which is the brand new thing. And you know the great thing about it, even though they've moved to San Francisco, haven't missed a beat.
Mm-hmm.
Like it is the same comic. It's the same joyful start that we got back in issue one of the last series. Him starting there. And the last panel. I'm not going to spoil it,
yeah,
but reference to Foggy, who's absent from that first issue. And you think, I like where they're going. Like, he's already giving us those little cliffhangers that he's famous for in the previous series. Look, you know, if you were a fan of the previous Daredevil series, all that's happened is they've renumbered them.
This There's
is
just not a straight, much not to like.
This I is mean, a straight continuation.
Yeah.
So if you like the other Daredevil series, just keep reading.
We're just expanding the universe out to different
just
states.
Keep reading. Just keep reading. The other book that came out from Marvel, two other books that came out from Marvel this week were Ms. Marvel number 2. And
I haven't read Ms. Marvel number 2 yet, but I really like the first one.
Look, so. we spoke a lot about the same things we liked about the first issue, the art style, the use of, you know, being an all-American Muslim family, and the values that the parents try to give to her.
Yeah.
And so forth. All that's in here. But this is a lot of her kind of working out what she's going to do with her new powers, like how they work. It's very much still the origin phase of this series. So it's like part 2 of the first 5 issues. You know, will be.
Yeah, I think the first. Know, yeah, you're right. I think the first few issues are going to be all about her working discovery. It out. Yeah,
and it's funny. Like, there's one line in there I just loved, which was her saying something along the lines of, "You know what else I just discovered? The disturbing trend of superheroes not wearing underwear underneath their costume." another one that came out this week was very appropriate for the film we saw was Winter Soldier: The Bitter March number 2. Did you read this?
I did. Yeah,
because we both loved the first issue.
I think I love this just as much. It's continuing to be awesome, especially after having seen Winter Soldier. And we both read Winter Soldier, the arc before.
We should say that. And, I finally caught up with the arc that the film was based on.
Yeah. And like before reading that, like I sort of had a vague knowledge of the Winter Soldier.
And what he was.
And now I have like a huge knowledge.
Now I want to read everything.
I know.
Because, Dave, you would have read a lot of this. David, you would have read a lot of this before, wouldn't you?
Winter Soldier?
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. This has always been a favorite arc, the idea of bringing Captain America face-to-face with something that is not something that... I mean, Captain America is always against Red Skull. He's always against Hydra. He's always against... To put him into contact with something like the Winter Soldier with the background behind it...
Mm.
Puts a very personal spin on it, and it makes it such compelling.
The stories that I think are really interesting, and this is where the film comes in as well, is the whole notion of Cap with all his morals and his integrity and his 1940s ideals, how he goes up against the whole notion of something like, you know, the Patriot Act and all those kind of things, which is kind of where Civil War comes in as well.
Like Cap has to actually confront his own guilt. In a way. And then there's that whole man out of time thing, which the movie does brilliantly.
Yeah, and then when you roll this together with, if you've got a comics background, you roll this together with something like Civil War, which is very much Captain making a stand and saying what you're doing is wrong.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter whether the morals behind it were right. It doesn't matter whether the ideals were right. What you're doing is wrong and standing up for it.
I'm going to make a call here. I wouldn't be surprised if they're heading towards something like that in the film universe. I reckon they're going to...
We've speculated on that before, with saying we could head to a Civil War type idea.
Type thing. But the thing is, the thing I like about the film, and I won't talk about too much about the film because we are going to be doing a special on the film in 2 weeks' time.
And I haven't seen it
and
yet.
And David hasn't seen it yet. but the one thing I will say is what they've done very well is taking the elements from that comic book run, very much adapting that to the screen, but adding this own level that's unique to the cinematic universe as well, which I think is what they've been doing marvelously. Quickly mention Voice in the Dark number 5 came out this week. Yep. Laramie Taylor. Look, we can only bang on about this so many times. I know Laramie would
easy way to say this, which is just go read the book, people.
Yeah, if you're not reading the book, read it. There's only so many times we can tell you to read this book. It's funny. It's brilliantly written. The artwork's great. And Laramie's a good friend of ours, so just go read it. Just do it.
And you can go back and listen to it.
And if you don't do it, we'll personally come over and beat you over the head with, a big Captain America shield or something.
Yeah, I don't know if we'd go that far. But anyway.
my favorite Captain America. And this is one of those things. It's one of my favorite things that they do on, like, you know that kind of, that website, superdickery.com, where they have, like, you know, out of context panels. And one of them was the sound effect that they had for Captain America throwing the shield against the wall was wank. that's the sound, apparently, in real life. That's the onomatopoeia wank. For that is okay. Wank. Okay. Sovereign number 1 came out this week from Image Comics. Didn't really grab me, but I'll see how it goes. It's kind of one of those things where it's like the first issue didn't grab me. Don't know whether it'll come around for the second, but I'll see how it goes. I've written down Justice League number 29, but I think that was solicited for this week but didn't come out. Harley Quinn number 4 did come out though.
Oh man, I can't wait to read this.
Yeah, I know, because you've had such a busy week, but this is your comic, man.
It's sitting there first on my list. It's like it is.
Look, again, another book that hasn't missed a beat. Like, you know,
and can I just say, and this is minor spoilers, and I'm not going to say what it was, but all I'm going to say is, if you are a fan of Harley Quinn, watch Arrow this week. That's all I'm going to say.
Because she's a qualified therapist. but it's another one that did come out from Dark Horse. I think it's a miniseries called Witcher. And I'm not familiar with the series, but there's a bunch of Witcher novels, apparently.
There are. I actually have never read them, but the covers have always had me intrigued. And yeah, it's one of those titles I've always gone, I should read this.
This is actually really cool, man, because you've got the Witcher character and this guy that's riding along with him. And you think he kind of is introduced as those really imposing, kind of taciturn types. But he's actually really funny. He's got some witty dialogue, and he has a couple of, you know, stories about busty wenches and so forth. And it's like, you know, there's one story he's telling. It's like, so there I was, and like you think he's just been introduced as this really serious character, and suddenly it's like, so there I was, and they told me I was in jail, and that I could either marry the woman that I'd been fooling around with, or go fight a giant. And so I says to them, "How big's the giant?" So it's kind of got that sort of sense of humor running throughout it. So, and it's kind of almost feels as though you were talking about it on GMC a few weeks back, Hansel and Gretel Witch Hunters.
Yes,
it almost has that sort of sense of humor to it.
Oh, I'm definitely going to catch up with it then.
I quite like it. Look, I haven't read this week is Buffy the Vampire Slayer season 10, number one, mainly because I haven't read season 9 yet.
I haven't read season 9 yet, so.
But those of you who are out there.
Dave, have you read season 8?
No, I haven't. I should.
Okay, because we did season 8 as a pick on the show. It's intriguing. It's not perfect, but it's intriguing.
And season 9 apparently has a lot of controversial things in there, including the whole abortion Buffy episode.
Right.
In there, which very much coming forward. And I've heard that in season 10 that, what's his name, James Masters, is that the actor's name?
Yeah,
who played Spike. And Nicholas Brendan.
Spike, yeah.
And Nicholas Brendan, who played Xander. Get to write their own characters.
Oh, really?
So that'll be really interesting.
That's intriguing.
So, yeah. Also, again, I'm so far behind on American Vampire, but the second cycle started this week. But as we were talking about last week, I'm a little bit disillusioned with Snyder at the moment.
I'm way back on American Vampire because I came to it very, very late. So
I can't look. Apologies for the person who said this because I can't remember who it was. I think they said it on Twitter. They said, if we call Zack Snyder Snack, should we call Scott Snyder Snot? I don't think I'll do that. I'm not that cruel. But
think so. And also, I'd like to get Scott Snyder on the show some stage.
Yes, definitely.
I can balance it out because I am a huge American Vampire fan.
Oh, please do.
I have been looking out for this book for ages, and I would have read it, but the comic book store, our local one, was out of it.
Right.
Yeah, the reason I had was...
It's another reason to run your own comic book
store. Exactly. You want to know the reason? Here, I'll tell you the reason, what I was told. Oh, we just didn't think it was going to be that popular.
Oh, my God.
So, yeah, I don't know what you make of that, but I'm not going to make a judgment.
Was this a big one in the
it
city?
It was a local one.
Oh, yeah. It was a local one.
No, well, yeah. It was a big one in the city that was local.
Interesting, because they had a few interesting comments to me as well this week.
Anyway, to be fair, the guy was actually pretty nice. That he was just like...
Look, you know... LCSs, you got to love your local comic book store because they are they are our suppliers.
It just had that feel of like you should have come in here 2 days earlier and got it, you idiot. You know,
they're our dealers, man.
But this is, look, you know,
digital comics on the way.
sidebar, but
I backed and bought a Daredevil though. To be fair,
this is the problem, right? By the time, like, you know, in the US, USA Today or here, or whatever mainstream media picks up and says, yeah, there's this really cool new comic that's come out that features. An Islamic shapeshifter, whatever, and people go into the store going, have you got this book that I've been hearing about? You know, this new Captain America, this new Ms. Marvel, this new vampire thing by the guy that writes Batman. Oh, yeah, we sold out. You had to order it 2 months ago. And it's like by the time the media gets to it, it's like, so to be a new comic book reader, you have to know about the titles 2 months in advance, have a standing order and pre-order it. That's the industry. That's just why digital is taking over bricks and mortar stores, because you can then just go immediately get on your iPad and go, I will download that now and I've got it.
Correct.
You know, and
you don't have a nice paper copy of it, but
that's the problem with the whole print industry, that you have to know 2 weeks and 2 months in advance. Back, they've gotten a lot better at it. The biggest stores will let you drop and cancel things at a whim. I remember when I first started collecting comics, it's this whole process of like, you know, yeah, if you want to cancel a title, you have to give us 2 months' notice. You'll still be collecting that title for 2 months, which means you'll be paying for it because we've already ordered it 2 months in advance.
Yep.
And the smaller stores, fair enough. But for the bigger stores where they're ordering thousands of copies of it anyway. So, you know, it's kind of the stuff.
And they have a new release rack. It can go back onto the new release rack.
It's kind of the stuff that Kelly Sue DeConnick was talking about when we interviewed her. That the whole idea is that, you know, you have to go in armed with all this information before you even start collecting comics. Like, where's the whole, dude, I just want a Black Widow comic, right? Because I just went and saw Captain America and she was kick-ass. Mm. Yeah, she really is in Captain America, the Winter Soldier.
spoilers!
Spoilers. I'll look very, very quickly mention, we sort of mentioned Walking Dead this week was amazeballs. Arrow was fantastic, and that film we went and saw was pretty good as well. Next week, what you're going to be looking out for, and this will be the 26th of March releases, you'll be seeing the all-new Ghost Rider number one.
We actually did say would be out this week.
Which was originally solicited for this week, and then they shifted
just
it.
Just really quickly, before you go on, did you guys read Loki number one?
Yeah, that was a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, I just had a look at it. Did you guys like it?
I was underwhelmed. Richard liked it more than I did.
Yeah, I like the sense of humor. You thought it was a little too...
I just thought it was a bit... I didn't like the personification of Loki. I didn't think it wasn't my Loki.
There's a manga subgenre called Yaoi or Yaoi, something like that, which basically, you know, boys love, kind of like a really sort of like homoerotic.
That whole
kind of
metrosexual.
Yeah.
It just didn't work for me. It didn't work for me.
It worked for me.
Yeah.
But I don't know what that says about me. But anyway, all new Ghost Rider number one finally comes out next week. This is, Ghost Rider in a car. Silver Surfer number one comes out next week. Ka-ching. You definitely want to go see that because that is Mike Allred art. Iron Patriot number one.
Curious.
Blackout number one is a Dark Horse miniseries. Real Heroes number one from Image. The next issue of Serenity Leaves on the Wind, that's number three. The follow-up to Tomb Raider. Tomb Raider number two comes out. Definitely be reading that. Rocky and Bullwinkle number one's coming out next week. Sandman Overture number two, about 3 months late, is coming out next month. Wake number seven. World's Finest number 21.
Oh, I'm looking forward to that because that's a continuation of the First Contact storyline.
That's right. X-Files Conspiracy number two, which is the end of that whole massive crossover arc with Transformers and the Crow and all that sort of stuff. Avengers 27, that seems like a long time coming. Guardians of the Galaxy's out next week and another issue of Hawkeye.
Now, that Guardians of the Galaxy 13, that is actually the conclusion of the trial of Jean Grey.
That is correct.
Yeah.
That is Togi coming to an end. So these are things...
Which, if it's in Marvel style, means that it'll actually be an ad for another miniseries.
It'll be the trial of Scott Summers.
for what we know and what's on the horizon, I think this is just going to end.
Oh, wouldn't that be refreshing?
I think very much. I think Bendis has probably got so much on his plate. He doesn't want to go into any other more major things. But what we are going to go into, speaking of Bendis, is the news headlines. And DC Comics will make another crack at the war genre with star-spangled war stories coming from writers Justin Gray and Jimmy Palmiotti. It will star a G.I. zombie, a character who fights for his country throughout war after war.
At least he's got a good writer. Brian Michael Bendis has confirmed via Tumblr that Marvel has officially greenlit Spider-Man number two.
Ooh. Speaking of Bendis, Sony Pictures TV has announced that an adaptation of Powers is coming exclusively to the PlayStation Network as a 10-episode series.
About time something happens with it. Image has announced some major new titles for June, including Outcast from Robert Kirkman, The Divine and the Wicked from Kieran Gillen, and Ted McKeever's The Superannuated Man.
Very much looking forward to those, but DC Comics has announced that its new title for June is Infinity Men and the Forever People, coincidentally written by executive editor Dan Didio and Keith Giffen.
Fox has confirmed that 2017 will see sequels to The Wolverine and The Fantastic Four. What? Plus a mystery Marvel film in 2018. What else do they have?
I reckon they're sending the X-Men into space. Silver Surfer. You've tapped them. You've watched their cartoon. Now IDW will bring an Angry Birds comic out in June, but from the formidable talents of Jeff Parker.
Uber geek Patton Oswalt will join Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. in an upcoming guest role.
Finally, Brian Tyler has been confirmed as the composer for Avengers
Age of Ultron!
Just a little taste of Brian Tyler's
work. The man knows how to score a superhero film.
On Iron Man 3. Just going to let that... play for a little bit under while we're talking there. Speaking of Avengers Age of Ultron, apart from there being a little bit of a teaser for it in a movie we saw this week, there was that Marvel Cinematic Universe building a empire. What was it called?
Assembling a universe.
Yeah.
It was played in place of an episode of S.H.I.E.L.D. this week.
Yes.
And it was a really interesting little 1 hour retrospective, basically.
Where they mention Kevin Feige's name about 400 times. If only we'd
I can imagine that.
If only we'd had that a year ago.
Ask Kevin that one.
The things we learned from it included the fact that nobody wanted to write Iron Man. Shopped it to like 40 different writers.
Well, it's interesting because they actually said that when they decided to strike out on their own, they were an unproven studio that had no track record. And basically,
they were involved in the other Marvel films.
They were involved, but they were now saying, we're going to produce our own stuff. And nobody wanted anything to do with it because they thought, what the hell? And there was also this concern. They were basically saying that they could have opened their doors, made a film, and sunk.
Yeah.
With the space of one film.
Because if Iron Man didn't work, that was it.
That was it. It was gone. Well, Iron Man and Incredible Hulk, because they're shooting them at the same time, basically.
Right.
And they basically said that the reason they chose those two was because they had great faith in Iron Man. And Incredible Hulk, they felt that there was still a Hulk film there to make.
And I love the whole talk about like when they got RDJ on board, how Favreau was like, I know what you're doing. That's the movie I want to make. I'm glad you're going that direction. He's such a huge fan. And the way he phrased it was like the combination of the two of us was what got other people interested, and that's how they got people like Gwyneth Paltrow involved, who didn't normally make films like that.
Yeah, absolutely. And Jeff Bridges.
Yeah.
They all came on board because of the strength of Robert Downey Jr.
I'm pointing at Dave Longo because this is something that we said before we went and saw Cap the other day, which was that it's amazing. 2008, Iron Man came out. Here we are, 6 years later and 9 films later, and with a 10th one coming out in August.
And $2 billion films.
$1 billion plus films. But 6 years later, 10 films by August, and we're at a point where they've thought, let's see if an Iron Man film works to, let's release a Guardians of the Galaxy film.
Yeah.
You know, that's the short amount of time that they've taken to make that a reality for geeks like us.
Mm.
You know, and I think that's phenomenal that they've managed to do that. What you got to see in that special were a few little bits and pieces of concept art from Age of Ultron.
A lot of play of the concept.
I don't know who that artist was, actually.
Well, yeah, but there was also a lot of play of the Ant-Man concept.
Yes.
They're showing that footage a lot. So it's like, obviously, Marvel is really keen on that particular take on Ant-Man at this point.
Proof of concept.
Because they also showed
Edgar
Wright a lot in that as well.
Yeah.
So he was talking.
A very strange-looking James Gunn described Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. But the Hulkbuster. Let's talk Hulkbuster.
Oh, look. We know that one of the opening scenes in Avengers
Age of Ultron.
There you go. is going to involve the Hulk smashing up South Africa. The shooting in Joburg, I think, at the moment.
Yeah.
He's always angry, babe.
They actually showed a behind the
I
scenes.
I think it's the age old.
They showed a behind the scenes.
You think it's Hulk's a prawn? Sorry.
They showed a behind the scenes shot from them making it, and they actually had a full size Hulkbuster arm sitting on the set. So you sit there and go, okay, so there's some mechanical parts built.
So
to
like
this
we've
thing.
Been wanting to see this. You know, there's always talk that they're going to end up doing like a Planet Hulk, World War Hulk kind of thing. So maybe this is the thing where they finally realize, yeah, that Hulk's angry all the time, isn't
yeah,
he?
Yeah, pretty
know?
Much.
So what were you going to do? So we've got that. We've got hints. You know, we've got concept art of Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver. Mm-hmm, Dave.
Mm-hmm.
And they've also got...
I also love that one little... we should have grabbed some sound clips from it, but there's that one clip of Samuel L. Jackson where when he was hired... they tried to keep it secret. They actually said all the way through the producing of Iron Man 2, they basically kept him under wraps, but it leaked, and suddenly it was everywhere saying that he was going to play Nick Fury. But when he said that he was... Samuel Jackson is a huge comic book reader, and he said his entire life, he goes, Nick Fury was a white dude.
Yeah.
And then he goes, then he was David Hasselhoff, another white dude. And he goes, and then he picked up a comic book one day and he goes, hey, that's me.
and the other thing that I thought was really interesting was when they first announced it, they had all those like trade papers saying Marvel rolls out the B-heroes.
The B-heroes, you know.
And I thought that was really interesting because, you know, at that stage, Spider-Man was gone, X-Men were gone, Daredevil was gone. Fantastic Four were gone. It's like, who are these other cats that they've got?
It's
like, and I think that's a real testament to what Marvel's done without those other cats. They've made the biggest superhero films of all time.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, out of that.
I think they've done an amazing job. And I think this documentary was a real just patting themselves on the back. But at the same time,
like, if anyone can pat themselves on the back, it's
I think they deserved it. You know, and I think they deserve to basically say, you know, this is our time slot. We normally do a show here. But you know what? Let's just have a little talk.
Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is a show that gave us the chance to have a weekly sit down with that universe. Yeah, why don't you start doing that?
Well, what was interesting was they actually did talk about Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. as well. And they were saying that they're going to have all these tie-ins. And some of the tie-ins haven't happened yet.
No.
And so you sit there going, so that we can kind of get a hint of what's to come.
You compare it to what Arrow is doing. Like they're going, I mean, the thing is, though, Arrow hasn't crossed over with their cinematic universe yet. So when they start doing that...
cinematic universe?
That's right. Well, they are slowly building one. Well, there was that one movie by Snack, and then there's...
And that other one that no one cares about.
That one coming out. You know what's interesting? On... sidebar. what's really interesting on something like Superhero Hype, I went on there and they had a... When the news broke that Cap 3 is going head-to-head with Batman versus Superman...
With BS.
With BS. There's actually a little poll, and it's like, when they come out... On, you know, if they come out on the same day, which one are you seeing first? 60% of people said Batman versus Superman, but Cap hasn't been Cap 2 hasn't been released yet.
Exactly.
I think Cap 1's too far away in their mind. I tell you what, if that poll was run the day after the release of Captain America: The Winter Soldier, which I'm here to say now is the best in the franchise so far.
Agreed.
Everyone's opinion is going to change on that. They're going to be like, super who?
Well, you got to remember that
people have no idea what to expect.
Well, no, and that's the thing. What they're expecting at the moment is the fact that Captain America was the least performing of all the Marvel films. It was a period film. It was there was a lot of factors. But
they've taken it up about 1 or 17 notches.
And what is funny is that it's
somewhere
actually,
in between there.
What is funny is that the first Captain America is actually still one
it's
of
so
my
It's so weird sitting on it though, isn't it, Richard? It's like, because it doesn't feel right. Like, we should be watching it with everybody else.
Yeah.
But like having the prior knowledge, it's like, you can be psychic about it, because when people see this, their heads are going
to
explode.
My review is up there on behindthepanels.net, completely spoiler free, but I want to share all the spoilers with you. I want to talk about them.
And we will in 2 weeks.
2 weeks' time.
So,
but for now, we put it, that just went up there, pick of the week in episode 95, I guess it will be. But until then, we've got a pick of the week for this week. So why don't we get into it?
Cool.
Well, see how you like this.
What is it, Batman?
Whatever it is, it's awfully funny.
It's the pick of the week.
When Dr. Stephen Strange is shot, he begins an investigation into his own attempted murder. Joined by the trusty Wong and the mysterious night nurse, they set out on a journey that may result in the greatest medical discovery in history. A cure for all human illness. Delving into Strange's own past, the dynamic team of Brian K. Vaughan and Marcos Martin set the stage for the next chapter in the strange life of Dr. Strange. This is Dr. Strange, The Oath.
That groovy little soundtrack that underscored that was from that 78 film again.
And if you can round this film up, it's a bit cheesy, but it is worth having a look at.
There's a lot of it out there on YouTube, so go check that out. But this book, I had not read much Doctor Strange. And to be fair, except from the New Avengers stuff, which kind of follows this, Bendis' New Avengers stuff, and the current New Avengers title written by Jonathan Hickman, where he's part of the Illuminati, I hadn't read much Doctor Strange at all.
Right, right.
So this for me wasn't my introduction to Strange, but it was the first proper solo Strange story that I'd read.
And for me, Doctor Strange dates back into the 80s for me, because I read a lot of Doctor Strange in the 80s and his intermixing with the Marvel Universe.
Yeah.
But it was actually more recently, it was the New Avengers that brought Doctor Strange back into the fold for me.
Well, actually, for me, my introduction would have been during the 90s Spider-Man cartoon. And there was a whole arc
with Doctor Strange.
So I knew a lot of his origin story. I knew the major character in his life and all that sort of stuff. What I like about this book...
Hold on, before you go on, what is your introduction to Doctor
Strange? It'd be Civil War.
And the
Illuminati stuff in there. But it's very similar to Richard. This is my first proper standalone, especially knowing the origin.
Like
this kind of redoes the origin, doesn't it?
Which is exactly what you're about to say.
Which is great for people like me.
It doesn't redo it, but it just kind of tweaks it out a little bit.
Well, this is the thing. It tells the origin story, but it does it for a reason. Yeah. Because there are people who were around at that stage who make a reappearance and become major players in this. This is what I like about this book. It's a 5-issue miniseries. Came out, I think, 2007, 2008, something like that. And look, apart from the one of the things that one of the reasons we did it this week, apart from the fact that we wanted to do a Doctor Strange book, it's written by Brian K. Vaughan, yeah, who hasn't steered us wrong ever. Mm-hmm. It's written by it's got art by Marcos Martin, who's a great artist, but is also currently working with Vaughan on The Private Eye, which is available digitally, and I think issue 6 is just about to drop. If you aren't reading that, by the way, go and read it, because it is probably one of the best books on the market next to Saga at the moment. So have we mentioned that we like Brian K. Vaughan?
Brian K. Vaughan is a personal favorite of this show.
And Brian, if you want to come on the show and you're listening.
I remember there's also that little book that he wrote called Why the Last Man.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
It's just a little one.
We should also, because I think the only...
Have you done Ex Machina?
No, we haven't. I think that and the only other major one of his that we haven't done is Runaways.
I haven't done Runaways, yes.
Yeah, which is I've read bits of, and it is great.
So you would have read a bit of Runaways because
there's a little bit of it
in
Civil War.
Yeah.
There is a couple of issues in Civil War.
Do we mention that we love Civil War?
Civil War and Siege, I think, are a favorite of Dave and Dave. Mm-hmm.
Not to be confused with Civil War, which was which was all in the head. But I love the opening to this book, Doctor Strange, The Oath, because it starts in a waiting room and guess what song's playing? The Girl from Ipanema is playing. So setting the scene. It's Iron Fist and another character that we're not familiar with sitting in a waiting room while this song plays. And
we'll save her for later.
Yeah, and they're talking. We got a lot of feedback this week. And they're talking about, you know, the ailments that have led them to this secret, you know, hospital for
heroes. I love how casual Iron Fist is as well. He's lounging back on the chair.
Yeah, pulled my hammy fighting a bunch of ninjas, you? Yeah. And then suddenly Wong pulls in Doctor Strange, who's been shot. The night nurse comes out.
Was it just me, or did you think they were in, like, waiting for Doctor Strange?
Yeah.
So, because they're in, like, this waiting room, and they're like, this is a special doctor, blah, blah. And
I'm going,
this is going to be Doctor Strange's practice.
And then Doctor Strange gets brought
in. And then suddenly
in.
They bring Doctor Strange in.
So there's the mysterious night nurse who has a whole history with Marvel, which I'm not that familiar with.
No, neither am I, actually.
But if you go and look up the Marvel, wikis and all that
and
sort of stuff.
I mean, I read a lot of Marvel comics in my time, and I mean, Night Nurse is not somebody I'm familiar with.
I just thought she was a Vaughan creation.
No, she had existed before, but this is a different version of her, I think. What I love about that scene is then because Doctor Strange can astrally project, he's like directing the operation, saying, no, if you do a little to the left, otherwise you're going to set my artery. What that ends up doing is, as I said in the intro, is starting an investigation whereby who shot him, because it was someone who managed to get past his mystical barriers.
And break into the Sanctorum.
And then get a vial of this liquid that he had acquired for reasons we don't know initially. And they're all sort of saying, if this is what I think it is, it needs to be destroyed. And other people saying, no, we need this. This is going to change the world. Spoilers and all on the show, of course. What we eventually find out, this vial is not just a cure for cancer, which Wong has developed, his trusty sidekick.
He's developed a brain tumor.
That is inoperable. And so Stephen Strange is doing this to save Wong first and foremost. But then finds out that after he's gone into the mystical realms to bring this back, he hasn't just found a cure for cancer. He's found a cure for all diseases.
All diseases.
And he says this will change medical history.
And what's really interesting...
What's the line? Even the bloody damn cold.
And one of the things I really like about it is the fact that they go to great pains to explain that magic cannot create... things, medical discoveries.
Yeah, so they can't, like, you know, you can't recreate penicillin in
exactly.
magic or something. You know?
But, and just as the real world can't recreate magic, you know? Yeah. So they can't cross over. But this is a mystical potion. Mm. And so the belief is that Doctor Strange, with his mysticism, might be able to replicate it magically and create enough to literally solve everybody's ailments. Mm-hmm. Which causes a bit of a rift with... a large pharmaceutical company.
And interesting enough, the pharmaceutical company in this is called Timely Pharmaceuticals, which, if you know your comics history, was the original name of Marvel Comics.
Yeah.
So it's a nice thing. But that is also very topical, because the whole idea of, you know, there's always that question is if there was a one-shot cure for cancer or a one-shot cure for AIDS that was found today, the pharmaceutical companies would be like so wrapping that up and charging a fortune for it. Like, it wouldn't be there for the benefit of humanity. It would be
is actually the argument which this book raises very well, which is pharmaceutical companies may actually want to bury it because they make more money long term rather than a lot of money on one shot. Yes. You know, so there is the argument which is kind of what this book is addressing, which is they want to bury it.
Yeah,
and he said if there's actually a line where he says, "If this is what I think it is, I'll pour it down the sink."
Yeah, which is the subtext to this whole book, which is when this book came out, 2007, 2008. That issue is very topical in the US, particularly because the healthcare system up until Obamacare came in, is very different to what we enjoy here in Australia.
Yes,
what people enjoy in the UK
or Canada or Canada. France or just about every other Western
Paraguay.
Country. ironically, Cuba.
Cuba, yeah.
Alaska, Hawaii.
You can thank our lucky stars we don't live in Paraguay. But I had to throw in a Simpsons quote there somewhere. That's what I like about the story as well. It's one of those things because, like, we know from Why the Last Man, we know from Saga that Vaughn uses his science fiction, or in this case, his mystical stories, to talk about another issue.
Yes.
You know, there's gender politics happening all throughout Why the Last Man. There's Saga touches on a number of different things. It talks about, you know, prejudice between two races. It talks about, you know, war generally. What is the opposite of war? You know, that kind of thread that's been running through Saga for the last, you know, a couple of years. The last 18 issues, I think it is. And so this as well, it's got the whole medicine versus, you know, medicine, so science versus faith, almost, in the guise here of mysticism, you know, Dormammu.
Louis talks to his cape. His cape's his friend. The cape, what is it? The cape of levitation, the cloak of levitation.
Is that the eye of Agamotto?
Eye of Agamotto and the cape of levitation, two different things.
Yes.
But they're both his friends. And when they come out of the beast in that one issue, he goes, "Ah, welcome back, my friends."
Stephen Strange is a terrific character, and I don't think he's exploited enough in the comics, because I think it's hard for people to get a beat on him. Because he is, pardon the pun, a strange character.
And this is why I think that in this book, and I think in New Avengers, they were really successful at finding something for him to do.
Yes.
So this book in particular, I think, is a really good Strange story. I think that the idea of rolling what is currently going on into events from his past is a really great way of telling his story, making it so that the main antagonist of the book is actually something from his past.
Yeah, so you don't get labored with, like, you know, 17 pages of exposition.
Yeah, exactly.
But you get that woven into the current narrative, and that's a really strong thing that, even though this is only 5 issues, it's a really strong thing that Vaughn does in a lot of his other books. He manages to give you a couple of issues and then go back and tell somebody else's past story. Carry on, but those little past stories start weaving their way into. So if Vaughn had, into the main narrative, I should say, if this had been an ongoing series from Vaughn, you would have seen that peppered a little bit longer throughout the series. But in this tight little format, and I've got to admit, I've not read a lot of short things from Brian K. Vaughan. I've only ever read these long played out sagas, which he's got, you know, 5 years in advance planned out, you know.
Yeah.
So it was nice to read a tight little, very filmable
absolutely.
Story. In fact, I wouldn't, you know, this would be a really great example of what, if they made a Stephen Strange film, which they are very much talking about. I think Kevin Feige would like to see that as part of Phase 3, if not Phase
4. Well, Stephen Feige has made no secret of the fact that he said if Phase 2 was science fiction, Phase 3 was going to be mystical. So,
and, like, you know, we know if Kevin Feige's got it in his head to do it,
it's going to happen.
Years ago, he said, "I want to make a Guardians of the Galaxy film."
Mm.
And here we are a couple of months away.
It makes sense, because you guys have read the Infinity War and the Infinity Gauntlet. Like, Doctor Strange takes one of the gems. And
so the beginning of the Illuminati.
With the whole Thanos stuff. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
absolutely. Like, that Phase 3 could be building towards the Illuminati.
There is the talk that Phase 3, Avengers 3, which is the conclusion to the Phase 3, would be Thanos and the Infinity Gauntlet.
Because they've already introduced the Infinity Gems in the Thor, the Dark World.
You know, it would be awesome for Phase 4 if they just did Civil War over, like, 5 films. Like, Civil War Part 1, and then the time between the movies is in real time.
Dude,
so 3 months have elapsed, and then Iron Man 4 is like the continuation of Civil War.
Can we put you in charge?
That would be amazing.
Yeah.
We've got the Ether and the Tesseract.
Before we get back to the book.
And Loki's scepter is a a gem, right? Didn't Kevin Feige say that in an interview? So, like, that's not in any of the films. I just
before
I,
we get back to the book, the one anyway, sorry. Say is that the real shame is that geeking we can't have what's his name, Reed Richards, as part of the Illuminati. Xavier, for that matter.
No, exactly. You
know? But the other thing we have to talk about with this book is not just Brian K. Vaughan, of course, is Marcos Martin.
The art's beautiful.
He's beautiful. If you've read any of his other stuff, if you've read, of course, The Private Eye, you'll be familiar with the art style on this. And I love the way Stephen Strange is drawn as this long, gaunt sort of character. And if you get the trade paperback, which Dave has brought along with him, you can see Martin's sketches in the back here of how he's designed this. Always kind of like the face is almost perpetually in one-sided shadow.
Yeah.
You know, he's really got that he uses tone and shadow a lot around Strange, which is appropriate because, you know, he exists in a world of light and shadow and darkness and magic and mysticism.
And the eyebrows are brilliant.
Oh, those really perpetually arched eyebrows.
That's something that's a Stephen Strange trademark.
Yeah.
I mean, it's always been like that. So.
When we're talking about the 1978 Doctor Strange thing, it's like he's got the 70s perm and a porn stash.
Yeah.
And it's great, though, because that was an example of what a real man was in those days. And he almost looks like Tom Selleck in Magnum P.I.
Or John Holmes.
He
does. He looks a lot like John Holmes.
He looks like John Holmes. And like one of his first bits of dialogue in that film is he's talking to the nurse, not the night nurse, but he's talking to a nurse that's there. And she says something about... he goes, oh, you know, there's no rule against falling in love. And she goes, we're not talking about falling in love. We're talking about making love.
Oh, we're talking about the eye of Agamotto.
Show me your eye of Agamotto.
And we'd like to take an opportunity to remind listeners that we carry a clean tag on this show.
I said
hey, we
nothing.
Were clean. Yeah.
I said nothing.
Subtext.
Can I say the other thing I really love about this book is I really love the relationship between him and Wong.
Yes.
To the point where there's two scenes in particular I like to talk about, which is one where they've gone to the bookshop because he needs to, or they've gone to like a mystical bookshop to find out more about this elixir that he's heard of before he goes interdimensionally fighting, and the thugs walk in.
Mm.
And yeah. Strange is so involved in the books.
I love this.
That he just has no idea what's going on around him.
And Wong's casually taking care of them.
And Wong's just taking care of business with his martial arts skills. But then later in the book, there's that beautiful scene where he's actually taking on the bad guy, and the bad guy throws down the hourglass, which takes away all mystical powers. And he goes, now we'll actually do this. And he actually gets a few hits on and Strange, and he says, you know, you're going to try and fight back. He goes, yes, but what you don't understand, he goes, while I was Wong's master, he was also mine.
Mm. Yeah.
And he turns around and he's also a martial arts master from what he goes, although I'm no Wong, I know a few moves, you know?
And I think the relationship between the two of them is what makes this work in a lot of ways. Because otherwise it's just, you know, your standard mystical mumbo jumbo stuff. But because they've got this close relationship, because they've got this very close symbiotic relationship, What ultimately comes down to is that Stephen is given the choice between saving the world and saving Wong. And, of course, it being
he chooses
Wong being comic book morals.
Yeah.
And we always knew he would because, you know, the needs of the one sometimes outweigh the needs
of the
many.
And what is a beautiful relationship is in later books when you actually get to Civil War is that they use... Doctor Strange's sanctorum as a hiding place for the rebellion, basically, with Captain America and so forth. And what I love is the fact that Wong keeps getting incredibly angry at them all because they're taking up his place.
Now, we're going to have to move on to some feedback soon because we've got about 10 minutes left. We've got a lot of feedback this week. But a quick round of... this isn't Comics 101.
No, but it's a fun read.
It is. If you're going to start with a Doctor Strange book, I'd say start with this one. Dave, what do you reckon?
Yeah, agreed. It works on so many levels. It's also an awesome detective story.
Yes, it is. That's what it effectively. If you're looking for a good detective yarn with a little bit of mysticism involved in it, and you're looking for a Doctor Strange story to start with.
If you're looking for a Doctor Strange story to introduce you to the world of Doctor Strange because you've heard about him but you can't figure it out, this is where you start.
I agree. So I think we've all recommended that book.
Absolutely.
So I think it's time for a bit of Girl from Ipanema, David. Hey, girl. What's up? This week we pretty much got feedback from every single one of our channels this week, so we've got a lot to go through here. From iTunes, so if you want to leave feedback for us on iTunes, either go to the Behind the Panels feed on iTunes and you can leave a star rating. Or you can leave a little couple of words there to tell other people what you think mm-hmm. of the show. This is how we get higher ranking in iTunes. Yep. So definitely go and do it.
It's also how we get higher.
Because to be young is to be high, Dave. Speaking of which, Jelly Muffin has left a comment saying that with the title Fun, Entertaining and Informative, 5 stars. Thank you, Jelly Muffin. An informative and well-presented podcast with great rapport between the hosts, entertaining and amusing. It's an essential listen if you enjoy all things comics. Thank you so much, that's Jelly wonderful. Muffin. I can't say it with a straight face.
It's a great handle.
Now, Sharky K, who is a huge fan on Twitter, has contacted me a few times. Really, really, really big fan of the show. Left a 5-star rating on iTunes as well, calling us the Batman of podcasts. How awesome is that? See, this is by far my favorite podcast. The Geek Actually guys really know their stuff and cover a big range of comics. This show is really informative and still has me giggling every episode. I highly recommend this podcast, even if you're not yet into comics.
Hey, there
3 you go. Exclamation marks at the end of that. So that's a big, big round of applause there for us.
And we specify the yet.
Yes. So this is what the show's about. If you want to get into comics,
discovery.
You listen to us. If you're already into comics, you listen to us. Point of that story is,
you listen to us.
Drew M. Taylor on Twitter says, listening to the Behind the Panels podcast, these guys are awesome. If you love your comics, subscribe. Which I thought was nice.
Can't say it any clearer than that.
No, and I responded to that thanking Drew and saying, look, really means a lot to us, thank you. To which he responded, stumbled across it the other day, great production values, good team banter and plenty of interesting discussion. Well done. That's what we want to hear. We want to hear people stumbling across us and saying, these guys sound good, particularly that guy with a golden voice.
Spaceship!
That would be Dave, yeah. our regular writer in a row, Jeffrey Withy, has said that it was basically a very long email. I'm not going to read it all out, Jeff, but basically asks why he can't get more than 20 episodes, the last 20 episodes from iTunes. David?
It's kind of a technical issue, and it's we don't want to go into a whole bunch of detail. The bottom line is iTunes does not carry any podcasts. iTunes is just a reciprocal for an RSS feed. So basically, every time you click on our link in iTunes, it is actually hitting our site. It's not bouncing it out of iTunes. It's actually having to reload it every time. The other thing is, so that can actually, with a lot of people hitting iTunes, it can slow down the site.
So if there's too much there,
it can crash the site. Yeah. Now, the other issue and the bigger issue is what happens with iTunes is they download a package or an RSS feed, which has all the headers and basic information and so forth to load up in their directory. Now, if that file becomes too big when they have to access it, they can actually cancel your account. So they can actually just drop the podcast because they'll say it's basically being hammered. We can the number of episodes it shows on iTunes is actually set by us.
Yep.
And 20 is a standard amongst podcasters to put the last 20 episodes. I could open the throttle and just throw them all out there, but it would probably cause a problem.
Because you do hear stories. I've actually seen people with much bigger feeds talking about, oh, yep, our iTunes feed's down again. We don't know what's going
exactly.
on.
Exactly.
It's probably because
so we put 20 episodes out as a maximum on the feed. Mm. That way there is something on iTunes. And it's where the discovery of the podcast is. But if you want past episodes, you go to behindthepanels.net.
We've actually listed them all out there with notes.
Exactly.
And geekactually.com. Exactly. Yeah.
Geekactually.com is actually the host of the podcast. So if you want the direct RSS feed, you go to geekactually.
So if you want to hear everything we've ever done, if you want to hear our 2 current shows, Behind the Panels, our other show, GMC, or Geek Movie Club, as it's sometimes called. We vary between the weeks. If you want to hear the past stuff, including Film Actually, Tech Actually, The Geek Actually Show,
all
that
at
stuff, all the actuallys.
All the actuallys.
And platforms.
The old platform shows there. Every episode we have ever recorded is available at geekactually.com. You just got to search for it.
So if you can't get enough of these 3 wonderful guys.
Yeah. So what you do is you go to geekactually.com, you download the episodes you want, you put them into iTunes, you sync them onto your iPod.
David, the feedback doesn't stop there. We've also got something from Lance Hatcher, who's also on Twitter, which is just Behind the Panels on Twitter, if you're looking for us. Says, hey, big Thunderbolt fan, do you read any of these? And if so, any chance to get a book on the show?
We are actually considering an Inhumans book. So
yeah, this is Thunderbolt.
Oh, Thunderbolt. Sorry, Thunderbolt.
We're also Black considering. Bolt. Yeah. Ah, yes, Black
I think
Bolt.
Black Bolt. Sorry, Thunderbolts. Yes, this is actually one of your favorites, isn't it?
Yeah, anything with the Punisher, I'm in.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And I am partial to Venom as, Flash Thompson as
the
Venom.
The Flash Thompson Venom. I think we should do a Thunderbolts.
All right,
Elektra.
Lance, if you
that's
know.
A good team, the Thunderbolts, though.
They've gone through a couple of different incarnations, because Thunderbolts during the Civil War were a very different Thunderbolts.
I can't remember who the writer was, but the anyway, yeah, the Marvel Now one was actually
I was going to say, Lance, if you want to let us know, just hit us up again on Behind the Panels on
Twitter.
Which arc you want us to do, and then we'll put that on the list.
Absolutely.
Finally, Gray Clack says on Facebook, this is the other way you can reach us, at facebook.com/behindthepanels, or just look up Behind the Panels on Facebook, says, hey guys, first off I have to say, big fan of the show. You guys keep me company on the 140-kilometer round trip to work for at least one day of the week. Oh my God.
That's a lot of time.
I complain about, you know, my 7-minute walk to work.
I complain about my hour. Yeah.
Says, your reviews have turned me onto some books that I probably wouldn't have, overlooked, or at the very least have made me go back and revisit some titles that I'd written off. I'm very keen to get into the comic book journalism, but have no idea where to start. What suggestions would you have for someone trying to break into the field? Okay, well, first of all, thank you for writing in. Lovely comments is exactly what we want to hear.
Absolutely.
First of all, comic book journalism. We want to point out this show is not journalism per se. This is three fans sitting around talking about books we like.
Yeah,
or discovering books.
Let's not forget the original intention of this show was always we're a book club.
We're a book club, yeah.
We pick a book every week, we read it, and we discuss it.
That said, we are touching on the journalistic bent. We do news headlines, we talk about current events and so forth. The main way we do that, we put ourselves out there. We've got a website, we've got a podcast. What we've done is we've just stuck ourselves out into the field.
The original intention of Geek actually many, many years ago is the same intention as this, which is our opinions are as valid as anybody else's opinions. So I said, let's start a show. You know, and
we talk about this stuff every week to each other, so we may as well record it.
Yeah.
Mm. Okay, so what's that happened as a result of that, we've gotten a little bit of a profile as a result of it. So we're out there, people are aware of us. You know, people start talking about it, so people start linking to us and seeing us. I was very lucky. And the same is true of our stuff we do with film. We just put ourselves out there and, you know, we start getting onto PR lists. We contact the companies. Once we've started getting a relationship with a few companies, a few others contact us sometimes.
We got our interviews with J.J. Abrams and Tom Hiddleston from Thor and stuff like that purely because they found us.
They found us, exactly. Now, two things we want to point out. One is we put ourselves out there. We've got the website. I actually got my gig with Newsarama as a result of the reviews I wrote on The Real Bits and also on Behind the Panels. They just wrote to me and said, hey, like what you're doing in the reviews. Would you like to write for us? I write for Newsarama almost weekly now as part of the Best Shots team. What I should point out is I don't get paid for that.
We don't get paid for this.
We don't get paid for doing this. All the money is going
in one
direction.
Exactly right. Everything you get in this stuff, like the screenings and all that stuff, is free.
Yeah,
but the side is that it's free. Yeah.
I get free comics as well, and I get advanced.
You work
comics
for free, basically,
but I work for free. That's the crux of it. Now, if you're going into this to make a dollar and a cent, I got news for you. It's going to take a lot of time, and you have to get one of the.
And
really
there are exceptions to this rule. There are podcasters. There are blogs out there that do make money.
Yeah.
But they are the exception, not the rule.
Yeah, I mean, look, most of the time, if you want to get a journalist, certainly in Australia, if you want to get a job as a journalist, you've got to get a degree in journalism of some kind. You go through
or be completely naturally gifted which is very rare.
And luck out. But most of the people I know who are doing this for a living have the degree, have worked their way up through the ranks. They've done radio or they've done whatever, and they've managed to get a job.
And let's face it, the only way you get better at being a journalist, sorry to interrupt for a second, Richard, get better at being a journalist is to write and to hone your craft. So
actually, I want to add one more thing to that.
Yeah,
If you want to get into comics journalism, read comics journalists. Read lots of comics. Yeah. Whatever you're interested in, absorb as much of it as you can. Whether you want to be a comics journalist, you want to be an artist, you want to be a writer, study your craft.
Yeah.
And I say this is true of film as well. Learn, like, you know, absorb it. I don't think you should write about comics until you've read a lot. I've read people who were saying one of the first books I've ever, I think that Dark Knight Returns is the greatest comic book I've ever read. How many comics have you read? I've read The Dark Knight Returns. It's like, yes, it's a fantastic book, but read widely. Then you know why it's a great book. Now, not being a film tosser about these things or a comics tosser, like, you know, an elitist of any kind. But I think there is something that you're going to get from having read a lot.
It's actually one of my complaints, and we'll take it to the film side of things because we've been doing film a lot longer than we've been doing comics even. But one of my major complaints is the fact that a lot of people who have started a blog or what have you out there and are writing reviews have no background.
Yeah.
And they literally don't know anything about film. They just know what they've watched.
I'm not even joking. I started my site just to see the movies for free and to see them early.
Yeah.
Just because I'm a fan. I'm not interested in getting paid. You know, I'm doing this because I love doing it.
And look, the fact that we've seen Captain America this week means it's paid off.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
the thing is, bottom line is, out of the three of us, the only journalist here would be Richard.
Mm-hmm.
purely because this is the field that he... For me, it was never about being a journalist. Mm. I am not a journalist. I have never said I was a journalist. I am a reviewer, a fan, a geek.
And today I just do it for the fun of it. Yeah. And I don't... For a reason. I've got no delusions of being this. I'd thought about studying journalism and...
You're a filmmaker, mm-hmm. so, you know, it's like...
I'm doing this because I like it.
Yeah.
We're running out of time, but let's just...
can I offer one...
I hope that answers your question.
can I offer one piece of cynical advice, though?
Just put yourself out there.
Go to a gym for 3 hours a day and get a really nice suit or a nice dress, and you'll be a success in a week.
Yep, there you go.
What?
Yeah, it's the secrets. Yeah, if you look good in the place of being a media personality, you'll
actualize.
Get
there. Think. Yeah. It's the message. It's
I just wanted to offer the antithesis of like be smart and read books. Yeah,
have perfectly white teeth.
Yeah, exactly.
Actually, I think that's how some people do get their jobs.
Yeah, exactly. I think it is.
Look, until next week, we're going to be doing another film kind of tie-in sort of book. We're doing the hardcover. We're doing the graphic
Excuse
novel.
Excuse me while I laugh for a second.
Okay. We're doing the graphic novel of...
Sorry, I've actually read it already.
David, I'm laughing. David, we're on a clock here. We're doing Noah by Darren Aronofsky, Ari Handel, and Nico Henriken. Which is the graphic novel that they've polished off when they didn't think they were going to make the movie Noah, which comes out next week. So we're going to be kind of talking about the two of them as a joint thing.
Predominantly, once again, this show, predominantly the comic book we're talking
also
about.
Also based on a book, I think.
Yeah.
So we'll be having a look at that. That's issue 94 next week. But until then, you can find me, I've mentioned a few other places already. You can find me on Twitter at DVDBits. You can find me at TheRealBits.com again. BehindThePanels.net and Newsarama.
You can find me at geekactually.com or on Twitter at David McVeigh.
And you can find me on Twitter at Dave Longo and DamnGoodCup.com.
Until then, I'm Richard Gray.
I'm David McVeigh.
Spaceship!
And this is Behind the Panels.
I had power. I would respect it. But not anymore. And I've lost the love. The one who my door. Let me